Cycling may be a brilliant way of keeping in shape and leaving a lighter footprint in your wake, but sometimes it seems there are dark forces at work, trying to keep us apart from our beloved bikes. We end the show with a cautionary tale for any of you listeners who've been inspired to get up and go, or at least a few tips on how to keep hold of your two wheels.
You know, it's funny. I have been living in New York City for the last 15 years, and it's a rare place in America where the bicycle is a work implement. It's a tool. You see people who deliver all day, every day on bicycles. It's a city that, unlike most American cities, is really powered by this need for a functional bicycle.
Writer and cyclist Patrick Sims has been using two-wheeled transport for years. And in New York, where he lives, people tend to travel on what I'd call classy bikes. Patrick says they're workhorses, but unlike most of my Dutch bikes, they tend not to be barely functioning rust buckets, which makes them more desirable.
I decided to ride my bicycle up to Midtown in New York City to go see my sister, and we had lunch on West 44th, which is basically the most expensive block in New York City. When I came out after lunch, my bike was gone. And I was sort of shocked and in despair, and I looked around and realized, well, wait a minute, there's surveillance cameras all around me. And very quickly, in just a few minutes, one of the building engineers on the block showed me his computer, rewound the security cameras, and showed me two guys coming in and stealing my bike. And after that, he actually burned a copy of the DVD of the surveillance tape. And I used to stay up late watching it, just getting madder and madder. And over the years, I got obsessed with it.
I've seen this video as well, and I'm amazed that it takes them quite a long time to steal your bike, I think, and also that loads of people walk past.
It's quite depressing. The more you look at it, you see many people realized what was happening and just kept walking. They were shocked. One guy was so shocked, he almost walked into a street pole.
And was this a beautiful bike? Was this a friend
no,
as well
this
as a bike?
No, this was an American-style workhorse, a hybrid, looks like a mountain bike. But what got me was not that the bike was so important. It's the impunity of the act of doing this in broad daylight. And it's not just me. The best estimates are that about 1 million bikes a year are being stolen.
Last bike I had stolen, I couldn't even remember which color it was. I was like, they said, have you got the serial number? No. Have you got the make? It's sort of bluey, green-ish.
The best thing about working on this was how much everyone wanted to help me, because so many people have lost so many bikes. People would start going way out of their way to help me when they found out what I was doing. You know, people would come out of buildings and say, can I help? Can I help catch bike thieves? Do you need anybody to watch the bike for you?
I mean, what did you do after bike theft number one?
I bought another bike of about the same low value. I got a better lock, but I got sloppy a few years later and left it in an alley and forgot about it, went overseas, and when I came back it was gone. You know, the first one had been an obsession, but the second one, it became a story, and I said, I want to know what happens to my bike. Where did it go? And I started tracking and learning, and the idea became, over time, to put out these bait bikes and actually watch what happens when they're stolen on surveillance cameras, track the bike as it moves through this underground economy hour by hour, day by day. And bike 3, bike 4, bike 5, I went on and gradually got closer and closer and finally did catch myself a bike thief.
More on that sting operation in a minute, but first the science bit. What Patrick means by using bikes as bait is attaching a small GPS device to them, which sends messages to your computer to tell you where it is.
I'd put them under the seat. You can track them live on the internet. It's like, I call it the love child of a cell phone and a GPS unit, where you basically ask it, where are you? So I was able, sometimes when I got a bike stolen, to see it live moving across the city on the internet and track every block, every passage, how fast it was moving, where it went, and go get the guy. I hate to admit it, but I almost wanted revenge. To see my bike stolen like that, it felt like a violation, and I thought, oh, I'll catch these. You know, I imagined them to be these sort of super criminals, and there was this underground network. In the end, what turned out to be the case is I tracked this guy who stole my bike across the city, and I went by taxi over to where his last reported position. And, you know, maybe it was just luck, but the second I jumped out of the taxi, I almost knocked him off my bicycle. And I suddenly confronted him. It was, unfortunately, not at all what I was expecting. He was a street person who was probably schizophrenic, deeply lost and troubled individual, not violent at all. He gave me my bike right back.
What did you say to him?
You know, I started a conversation on a pretext and sort of nervously worked my way up to finally saying, well, you'll notice I have a bike helmet, but I don't have a bike. And you have a bike and no bike helmet. And he sort of just realized as soon as I said that who I was. And he said, how did you find me?
But you've also bought stolen bicycles, haven't you?
Yeah, a big part of the question for me was, it was obvious when I saw my own bike being stolen on that surveillance tape that these guys were not, you know, it wasn't somebody just making off of the bike for his own purpose. They were very professional. There was two guys in a setup with a little street theater they did. They had a variety of tools. They steal bikes all the time. And they must be selling it. And I started looking into where, and the answer is right in front of us. And I went into that economy. I started following tips towards people who seemed to have way too many bicycles for sale online.
Did you feel a bit hypocritical buying one, or did you feel that kind of bike karma of I've had one stolen, so it's okay to buy one?
No, I don't think it's really okay. I thought it was justified to do it to investigate how sloppy the used market is, and I held my nose and went ahead and dealt with people. And I often wouldn't buy the bike. I'd just go talk to someone. But I bought a few that way just to see what was up. There's some guys on, you know, you'll see them on the street rebuilding bicycles. They have a box, a crate full of handlebars, and they're swapping handlebars off. That's an obvious first step. It's what's called a Frankenbike. And I bought bikes like that, and I didn't so much feel guilty. I felt like it was important to expose what they were doing. But in the end, I ended up with this one bike that I got in San Francisco, which is this beautiful bike. It's the nicest bike I've ever owned. And I bought it from a kid in a completely shameless and open-air stolen bike market. They don't even pretend to own the bikes or know. He told me. I looked it up on the internet. It's a $700 bike.
What? So he didn't I used to own this $700 bike?
No, it's just a kid. It's you know, it's a market where I was offered a stolen bike every 60 seconds. So I very quickly tried to bargain the kid down. I ended up getting it for $125. I threw some cash at him and rode away. And later, the police detective who works that stolen bike market a lot told me, well, you paid about $25 too much for that.
Seriously? So $100 is the going rate for a $700 bike?
Yeah, for a good bike. He said a bad bike would be $75.
What can you do?
Own a good lock and use it. You know, if you live near a college campus, a university, or in a big city like New York, the threat of getting your bike stolen is very high, so you need more than one lock. I ride in New York City with my seat locked to the bike, and you can remove the quick release hub from the front wheel and instead put little lock washers on there or special nuts on there that can't be undone very easily. You know, one of the lessons for me was, to my surprise, almost all locks work. Even a relatively weak lock, bike one that had a lock made by Kryptonite, a soft little flexible cable. And even the spokesman for Kryptonite, when she heard about this, she said, oh, I'm sure it only lasted 60 seconds. No, it lasted 17 minutes under assault from two guys with cutting tools and hammers and chisels. So, you know, you need a lock. You may need two locks. But you just have to know your own environment and how much risk you're facing. And it can become a lot of weight to carry around. I carry a 3-foot-long chain. But the risk, of course, is don't lose the key. Because if you've got that thing locked around your waist, there's all these stories about people sitting around in the office all day with their locks on because they can't find their key.
Has this experience put you off cycling at all?
No. In the course of this, I actually became much more – I really learned the pleasure of it. And I began to ride more seriously and have that experience of taking the long commute in the morning at dawn and seeing the city in a new way and – you know, especially in urban living, that experience of kind of fresh air and exercise is so transformative. And I have one bike now, which was one of the sort of hot bikes. I still ride it around. I love riding it. It's a beautiful, expensive bike. I've tried to find the owner and return it, and I can't. And I sort of have mixed feelings about that. I keep, you know, telling people, search on the internet, find my, reclaim this bike. But so far it hasn't worked, and I guess I can keep riding it. But I want to go legit. I want to get a real bike and keep it and lock it up and not have to see it disappear.
Our thanks to Patrick Sims. You can read his essay, Who Pinched My Ride, on our Facebook page, which you can find by searching for Earthbeat RNW.